If you can attract them, okay, four things happen. One, they pay their rent. Two, they stay a long time. Three, they're pleasant to deal with. And four, they take care of your house.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Oglesby and Scott Show. This podcast holds the belief that business and investing are team sports. We drop gems to help you turn your capital into generational legacy. We're sharing with you the best stories of successful African-American business owners and entrepreneurs.
Want more money to pay off debt and increase your income? I'm Terry Igioma from Invest with Terry, and I teach an online course on how to invest in the stock market for daily or weekly returns. My 7-step strategy saves you time and erases the guesswork from trading. With these 7 steps, I've earned over $16,000 in a day without having a large account. Start big or small. These proven steps will increase your profits and decrease your losses. To learn more, visit itradeandtravel.com.
And now, here are your hosts, Ms. Flippin' in Heels, Roshana Scott, and Mr. Time Millionaire himself, Charles Oglesby.
This is the Oglesby and Scott Show. My name is Charles Oglesby with my co-host, Ms. Roshana Scott, all the way from Chicago. How are you doing, Ms. Roshana?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. Everything is growing and flourishing. You're kicking butt out there. You know, we're doing well over here. Our guest is killing it still. But before we get into introducing our guests, thank you guys all for tuning in. The purpose of this podcast is to share the stories of successful African-American business owners and investors so that we can share the stories of successful investors. They do exist. And it's so funny. I tweeted something and I said that we these days are able to share a lot of success stories, which then leads to more success stories. And so I think that that is truly, it shows that what we're doing is working. I'm happy to see it. I'm happy to see all of these people that are just doing great things. Specifically our guest, he goes by the name of Joseph Asamoah. He invests in the DC market, which people know. I mean, honestly, when I see somebody investing in an expensive market, that alone is an accomplishment to me. And so that is a big reason why I wanted him to come on the show. And he's been doing it on a pretty substantial level, doing some creative things with it. I first heard him on the Bigger Pockets podcast. So I'm honored that he came on, you know, our little podcast. We're not Bigger Pockets level, but we aspire to be one day. So welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Charles. Roshana, it's an honor to be with you. I really appreciate the invite. Thank you.
So the first question we ask is, can you give us a little introduction of who you are and where you're from?
Sure. Yes. My name is Joseph Asamoah, and some people call me Dr. Joe. I'm based out of the D.C., Washington, D.C. area. I was born in Ghana, and that's in West Africa. And when we were 5 years old, my parents moved to England. So I lived in England until about 32 years ago when I came to the U.S., so I came here and I had 2 suitcases, $100 in my pocket. I knew one person in the United States. So that's essentially I came here. Anyway, this guy who I knew, he was my boss. And after about 6 weeks of being here, he was fired from his job. And not really for anything he did wrong. It was just that it was a reorganization. And so he was let go. The new guy brought his cronies with him, and my boss was let go. And so I hooked up with him a few weeks later. And this was really a defining conversation for me. What happened was that he said, "Look, Joe, this is America. These things happen." And I have these rental properties. And which is generating passive income. And I didn't understand what he was talking about. I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "Well, I've got these 10 houses." And at that time, I just couldn't imagine how anybody could have more than one house. I said, "You know, how is that possible? You could just like, whoa, 10 houses." Yeah. And he says, "Yeah." He says, "Well, here's some advice. Whatever you do, you may want to consider this real estate as well. Because but if you do get into real estate, my suggestion is that you keep your properties, don't sell them. Mm. Because over time, they will increase in value. And you'll be very thankful for that." So that's his words of wisdom to me after a few weeks after coming to the US. Anyway, about a year later, I bought my first home. It was a complete disaster. I mean, it was a disaster from everything that could have gone wrong, went wrong in this house. And I don't want to bore you with all the details, but the bottom line was that I was able to work through them. And I learned everything about what not to do. And then I subsequently bought my second house and then the third house and just kept on going until June the 6th, 2003. at that point, my rental income for my properties equaled what I was making at my job, and which is really the milestone I was aiming towards. And so I had my plan B. And so I was able to kind of leave the corporate world and transition to the real estate investing world. And so I buy houses, fix them up, and I keep my homes and I don't sell them. I do flip every now and then, but the primary strategy is to hold on to houses.
Nice. And so I'm curious to know, so you worked in corporate, what industry were you in? What type of job was that?
Yeah, I was in telecommunications. So I had an engineering background. And so I was in satellite communications, you know, all that stuff up in the sky. And but I also had an MBA at that time. I also did a PhD. So I was in the telecoms, arena originally.
Okay. And you say on that first house, you learned everything to do and what not to do. So what are some examples some things that you learned on that very first house?
Well, what happened was that I it's like 2 o'clock in the morning one day, you know, you turn the TV on, these gurus on the TV, you too can do this, you know, palm trees in the background. all you got to do is buy my course, give me your credit card, everything will be solved. So obviously I fell for that. I bought this guy's class, and it just so happened that he was in town in Washington, D.C. A few weeks later. And I went down there, went to a meeting where, you know, he said a lot of good things. I met this guy at the meeting. He said, oh, I've got a house I want to sell in D.C., and he says, I'll sell it to you for no money down, you know, just like what he says on the infomercial. So I was totally green, totally naive. I was just fresh off the boat, you know. And so this guy took me to the house, and they had some tenants in the house. So I asked him, you know, what are the tenants like? Oh, man, they're great. They're fantastic. I mean, I was straight from England. You know, all Americans were honest. So I took this man at his word. And I bought the house, and I found out that after I bought the house that they hadn't paid him for 3 months, the tenants, and there was a water bill for $5,000, a water bill, and the government was going to sell the house in a tax sale. And these tenants, they were real, real religious. You know, I mean, you'd go to the house, I'll ask for the rent, and they'll say, oh, well, you know, according to Matthew 28, verse 15, the Lord is good. Don't worry, you're bad. It'll be okay, you know. I mean, that was my entree to real estate. And nothing like what the guru said. And this was going on for months, okay? I mean, I would say, what in the world did I get myself into? You know, I didn't know what to do. And in Washington, D.C., the landlord-tenant laws are very, very pro-tenant. So it's very difficult to get somebody out of a house. Anyway, it's a whole other story. But anyway, in the end, I was able to turn that thing around and got the tenants onto assistance. And they were able to pay the water bill back and so on. So what I learned from that, looking back, I mean, I can smile about it now. We can all have a good giggle. At the time, it was like pure hell. but what I learned essentially is, in fact, if anything, it was probably a good experience, because I learned so much from that about what not to do. I learned about due diligence. I learned about, you know, understanding landlord-tenant court laws. I understood about, you know, communicating with people, how to create win-win scenarios whereby you can kind of work through issues and challenges. So from that experience, I kind of regrouped and then sort of did the house hack strategy. I mean, it wasn't called house hack at that time, but I mean, it was just, I wanted to buy another house. I wanted to rent part of the space out, so that way I can keep my salary for the most part. So I bought my second house where I rent. It had an English basement where you could rent the basement unit out, and also had a couple of, it was a 3-bedroom. I rented some of the rooms upstairs out. So I essentially was living in a house for free. And therefore I was able to save my money from my job. And then with that savings over time, then bought this third house, and then just kept on going and going and going. So that's essentially, the path I took.
When you're doing this and working your job and going through the struggles with tenants, what's going through your mind that makes you want to keep going? Because to me, that first deal, you're running into all these problems. How do you stay motivated?
Well, again, it's going back to what that original guy told me. He says, look, you know, at the end of the day, keep these houses, because I used to live in London. I mean, I've done a lot of travel around the world, and I realized that real estate, especially in capital cities around the world, it really doesn't matter whether it's London, Rome, Paris, it's the same. And that is, if you own real estate in a capital city of a country, it goes through cycles, yes, but over the long haul, it tends to appreciate, because the capital cities are usually the most resilient economies. That's usually where the money is. And, you know, and that's where, you know, land is usually fixed. It's a lot more scarce. And so if you can own some land property over time, it tends to appreciate. So, you know, so that was really the backdrop. So, I mean, believe it or not, after all of what, all that hell I was going through, I was making $50 in cash flow. After all of that, it's $50. That was it. Okay. So we fast forward to today. I mean, I bought that house for $47,000. And when I bought the house, they said I was paying too much. I was getting ripped off. Okay. So we fast forward today. I mean, that same house, which I still own, it's worth $750,000 now. And the rent is $4,700.
Okay? Wow.
And I bought, I've got home equity lines on that house, which I've used to buy more houses. So the point is, that is not to brag or anything like that. It's just to share with your audience the power of real estate.
And owning it and keeping it.
The power of owning real estate, especially in appreciated markets. It's always expensive. It's expensive 20 years ago. It's expensive 10 years ago. It's expensive today. And guaranteed 10 years from now, it's going to be more expensive. Okay. 10 years from now, people say, oh, what a genius, Charles, you were by buying the stuff in 2020 when it was so cheap. Right. You know, that's generally what it is. I mean, I don't know what the market is where you are, but generally in appreciated markets, you know, it's always expensive. And the reality is that, you know, 10 years, 15 years from now, you'll be saying what a genius you were when you bought it 10 to 15 years previously. Okay. So that's really, you know, some of the things which I'm a real proponent of that is to encourage people to build wealth by buying appreciating assets, you know, taking good care of those assets, making sure you can attract quality tenants. So they preserve and protect your investment, and treating them such, you know, so well that they stay a long time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What would you say to individuals who, like you said, I mean, and you make such a great point when you say it's always going to be expensive, because like you said, 20 years ago, people were saying at that point that it was expensive. So what would you say to individuals who are buying, but they don't have any support? Maybe it's not, they don't feel like it's an appreciated market, or it's not a capital city, or it's not, there aren't any planned developments. You know, what are some other key indicators to make individuals feel secure in that, you know, because appreciation isn't guaranteed.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, generally in real estate, there's two competing interests. One is the cash flow play, whereby you buy a house and you rent it out if you want to rent it out, and then you make your money through the cash flow each month. Okay, so that's one strategy. And the other strategy, which is competing, is I want to go for appreciation, you know, whereby you buy the house and hopefully over time it'll appreciate in value. So those two are always competing each other. In high price markets like where we are, possibly in LA area, and possibly where you are, Shauna, it's hard to cash flow, you know, because you pay so much for the houses, and the rent that you collect, is a disconnect. Okay. And so you can get appreciation, but you may not be able to get the cash flow. And you twist it around. There are other markets where you can get the cash flow, but you may not get the appreciation. You know, the price of the houses are lower, and the proportion, the ratio of rent to debt is higher. So you can get a decent cash flow, but you may not get the appreciation. And so what I realized was that I wanted both. You know, I didn't want to settle with one. I wanted both. And therefore, the challenge was, how can you create a business model whereby you can get both? And that's what I sort of stumbled upon what I do now. So answering your question, you know, if you're in a market whereby you may not get the appreciation, then the other alternative is to go for the cash flow play. Okay. And you buy enough assets whereby you can generate enough cash flow, whereby you can live off the cash flow. Okay, so I live in this area, and it's expensive. I mean, the other alternative is to go to another market where it's cheaper. But I've just chosen to invest close to where I live. I know this area, and I have systems here. And the challenge was, how do you create a formula whereby it works? And so I think wherever you are, it doesn't matter whether you're in the Midwest, the coastal regions, somebody somewhere in your area has figured it out and is doing well. Somebody has. Okay. So the challenge is, who are these people? What are they doing? You know, who are they? And, because if you find those people and you can leverage on their experiences, then you can fast track your success, because there's no need to recreate the wheel, because somebody in your market, wherever it is already figured it out. And so that's essentially what I'm saying, is that it doesn't matter where you are. There's a formula for real estate that works in your local area, wherever that is.
This episode is sponsored by Hood Estates. Hood Estates is offering a Hood Estates Elite Real Estate Investing Program, as well as a Hood Estates Trekking Program. All the details can be found in the show notes. You can also find them on Instagram at Hood Estates.
This episode is brought to you by 24/7 Watches. Shop our limited edition luxury watches at 247watches.com. That's TWENTY47watches.com. Use code Todd Capital at checkout for a special discount. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at 247watches. That's at TWENTY47watches.
So that's really interesting to me, because I live in Southern California, and so we always assume that there's no investment opportunities here because there is no cash flow. And so that was my theory, is like, okay, well, if you're going to invest locally, you need to invest for appreciation. And then you said you can do both. So let's talk about that. How do you accomplish both? Because that's impressive.
Okay. What I do is, you've heard of the BRRRR strategy, the buy, you know, renovate, rent, refinance, repeat. I was doing that before that term came about. It was a term that was coined by Brandon Turner and Bigger Pockets. But essentially what it is you buy a house, you force value by doing some kind of improvements, whatever that is. Okay. And once the improvements have been made, the value is increased. Okay. And then if you rent it out, then you're going to get some income in. Then you're in a position whereby you can refinance, the short-term money and replace that with permanent money. And hopefully, if you do the numbers right, you can get most of your money back out. And so you can recycle it. Okay. So that's what I was doing. And then what happened was I used to live in DC. And during the mid-90s, we're going through a downturn. I mean, I've been through 4 real estate cycles. So I have a pretty good idea how this stuff works, okay, and how it shakes out. So we were going through a downturn in the mid-90s in D.C. A lot of people were leaving the city, and so forth. Anyway, so I used to live at this house. And this lady, we moved and we put it up for rent. And this lady came over to look at the house, the possibility to rent it. And this is what changed everything. This was a game changer. She came to the house and she said, nice house. I don't want to rent it. I said, okay, why not? She says, it doesn't have a jacuzzi. Where's your hardwood floors? You know, this is a Section 8 lady, okay, with a net worth of zero. Look at me in the face and say, my house where I lived at was not worthy for her, okay? And I'm saying, what? Hold on a minute. What's going on here? Essentially, what was happening was that we're in a downturn, okay? And so there are people who ordinarily would be flipping homes, okay? So a rehabber would buy a house with the intentions of selling it, flipping it, but they couldn't sell it. And so because they couldn't sell it, they had to rent it, okay? And these people had jacuzzis, hardwood floors, stainless steel appliances. And so everybody, all the landlords are looking for the same type of tenant, a quality tenant who's going to take care of the house and so on. So she essentially was saying, look, there's a guy down the street who has this really nice house, and I'd rather go there than rent from you. And so what I realized is that there's a group of people with Section 8 vouchers who were not part of that stereotype. I mean, the stereotype that a lot of people have is that you know, these families are going to destroy your house. You know, it's going to be a crack house and gangsters are going to be roaming around. I mean, all that stereotype, what people tend to have. I realize this is not true for a number of people who are part of the program. They're really no different than you and I. They're just looking for a decent house in a decent area where the kids are safe, where they can go, you know, have access to decent amenities and hopefully can stay there for a while. Okay, so that's really what came about. And I realized that this group of people, if you can attract them, okay, four things happen. One, they pay their rent. Two, they stay a long time. Three, they're pleasant to deal with. And four, they take care of your house. Okay. And that was, that's what I realized, that there's a group of people with vouchers. Okay. If you can attract those group, I call them tier one Nordstrom vouchers holders. If you can attract that group of people, because they will not live anywhere. They won't. They don't want to be shot at no more than you want to be shot at. They don't want their kids to, you know, to be in a bad area no more than you want your kids to be in a bad area. They just want a decent house in a decent area and rent from a decent landlord. And so I realized that if I can attract these people, these families, then those four things which I just described occurs, and they stay a long time. And the key to real estate investing, especially single family real estate investing, is that if you can't figure out how to minimize turnover, that revolving door, if you can't figure that out, you make absolutely no money. I don't care what anybody says. I don't care what your cash flow is. You make no money, okay? Mm-hmm. Because whenever there's a turnover, the place is vacant. You got to clean it again. You got to paint it again. You got no income coming through, and all that cash flow that you've made all those months gets wiped out. Okay. Wiped out. Okay. And so if you can't figure out that portion of the business, you're not going to do anything. Okay. It'll drive you crazy and you'll say, I'm one out. Okay. And so that's essentially what I realized with these tier one voucher holders, is that they meet all the criteria that every landlord dreams of. And, my longest tenant is 23 years. I regularly have 15, 18, 10 year tenants, no problem. And there's a formula, because the voucher program, the Section 8 program, it works. The rent that you collect is based on two things. It's based on the location, the neighborhood or the zip code where the house is, and the number of bedrooms. So, and that's it. So if you can so if you understand that, then you can start working backwards. Okay. To see, okay, what house can I get? How much can I pay for this house? How much can I fix it up for? This is the rent I'm going to get. How many bedrooms do I need to get in this house, and to make the numbers work? Okay. And that's essentially what I realized, is that you can make, at least you can make it work in these high price markets. And because they stay a long time, you can realize the value of appreciation, you know, I can drill down as deep as you want, but I don't want to get too deep.
No, this is good. So what percentage did you say your portfolio is for Section 8 rental?
Right now, and I'm in the DC market, we have 32 houses.
Okay, that are Section 8?
Probably 20, the vast majority are Section 8. I mean, I've still got some market renters. But don't forget, this is an expensive market where the average price is $500,000, $600,000, $700,000, $800,000, you know. Mm-hmm. That's the price point we're talking about here.
Right, absolutely. In regards to the rental income, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you panic when the government shut down?
Not at all. It's recession.
Why is that? Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I said, I've been through four cycles. Okay.
Right.
Okay. The reason why I wasn't worried is because the way the Section 8 program works is that the tenant's portion of the rent is based on their income. Okay. So mm-hmm. if their income goes down because of lost jobs or whatever it is, okay, their portion goes down and the government's portion goes up to pick up the difference. So it really doesn't matter if they lose their job or not, because the rent will still come in. And as long as they're in the house, that money is guaranteed.
Not to backtrack, but you said that you left your job when your rental income matched your corporate income. Was that gross or was that net? And then also, where did you go from there? What did that look like?
Yeah, at that time, I mean, I worked at, I mean, I don't want to say where, it's a pretty well-known company. I mean, I had a six-figure salary. It was, you know, it's a pretty decent salary. But I also did a lot of travel. You know, I was doing that corporate stuff. Even though I had a lot of houses, I'm managing these houses by myself. I don't go through a management company. I just started to focus on getting out of that corporate drudgery, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where you're working 15 hour days, you know, traveling all around the country, doing all these different things. And I mean, it sounds exciting, but after a while, it's stressful and it's just not worth the hassle. So I just wanted to have more control of my time. And that's when I started focusing on putting systems together. That's when I started focusing, realizing, look, you know, what do I need to do to be able to transition from the corporate world into sort of, a full-time investor. So it was about $100,000was the gross cash flow from at that time. And that gave me the comfort to say, I had a plan B. I mean, I was married I had children, so I couldn't just quit my job. So you had to have a more realistic plan. And so I was focused on that, and that's what I was able to achieve. So since then,
that's where I was going next, is what did it look like after you left the job? Because we on this show have a theory that once you leave the job, your business takes off. And so when you have that competing, like that time battle with your job versus your real estate, and then once you're liberated from that job, you can fully focus on your real estate. Did that make an impact in your business?
Yes and no. I think it depends on how disciplined you are, you know, because with that excess time, you can use it effectively, or you can go off to the beach, you know.
Right.
You know, and it depends on you. I mean, it's you know, what's driving you, what's the, you know, how disciplined you are, and so on. So, you know, but you still have the stresses. I mean, at the, you know, it's not like the world is nothing, everything goes away. You have to work hard, you know, you have to have a routine. You have to spend the time wisely. You have more control over your time, because obviously you can now focus on what is important for you. I didn't have to fight the Washington DC traffic, you know, an hour and a half each way each day. You know, I didn't have to deal with that anymore, and so on. So it's definitely, it's great in the sense that you have more control. You have more control over your destiny, if that makes sense, you know, as opposed to being, have to fit into the you know, with your boss and what's going down at the job and things like that. It's good to be able to not have to deal with that. And you can spend time doing things that you want to do. You can start developing a relationship with people that you want to develop a relationship with. If you want to go to meetings, go to events, you can do that. Because you know that your financial foundation is being set. But I could only have done that. I decided to do the buy and hold way, the residual rental income, because it was stable, it was reliable, okay? And the Section 8 model is a very stable, reliable income stream, okay? It's recession resistant. It doesn't matter if the tenant loses their job. What you have to focus on is making sure that they stay in your home. You have to focus on making sure they're happy to be there. And then the question becomes, what do you do to make them happy? I mean, I can talk about that. But that's the other part of this thing. Section 8 is a three-legged stool. There are three components. There's the investor, you and I, and your audience, okay? And understanding that part. The second part, obviously, is the tenant. And you have to make sure that you can market, select, and screen the right tenant who's going to protect your investment. And then the third leg of this stool is you're now dealing with a housing authority. authority. Okay. They're the ones that administer the program. So now you have to be able to understand and navigate that bureaucracy and, you know, and develop relationships there to make sure that, what needs to get done for you gets done. So some of the components.
I've always been intimidated by Section 8. They have all their different inspections. They have all their different requirements and regulations. Do you think that I'm just kind of overblowing it and they're actually easier to deal with than you would think from the outside in?
Yeah.
Hey, everybody, it's your girl, Erica Williams from the Classy Climb blog. I'm a six-figure YouTube earner and the author of the book Smartphone Millionaire, How to Lend to People, Real Estate, and Businesses from the Palm of Your Hand. And if you're interested in the three things that changed my life over the past 4 years to become a six-figure YouTube earner and investor in multiple properties in multiple states, I would love for you to join me over at the Classy Climb YouTube channel.
Hey, ladies. This is Rashana Scott. And are you looking for a community of women real estate investors? If so, I want to take a quick second to share with you Infinity Membership. Sorry, fellas, but Infinity Membership is a women's only online community for newbie and experienced investors. Come let your hair down and join a non-judgment zone sisterhood where all of your questions about investing in real estate get answered. This is also an opportunity to learn from the best of the best. Other seasoned and successful women in the industry share their success tips often. Our live group sessions are twice a month, and we support each other daily within our private Facebook group. Our sessions range from driving for dollars to working with contractors to out-of-state investing, raising private capital, marketing your deals, and so much more. Does this sound like something that you've been looking for? Well, we would love to have you. For more information, visit us at bit.ly/infinity membership. Again, that's bit.ly/infinity membership.
That was a simple answer.
You want me to elaborate?
but also, what's the process for getting involved with Section 8? Because that, to me, is also kind of something.
Well, I'm sure it's different in every market.
Yeah.
No, it's a federal program, so there are similarities regardless of which market you're in. I mean, at a high level, they're all the same. Obviously, in terms of implementation or execution, that's at a local level. So the housing authority where you are, Rashana, and where you are, Charles, it may be different than the housing authority where I am. So it's a bureaucracy. So any bureaucracy, it's all about relationships. If you can have relationships with people in the bureaucracy, then usually you can get stuff done. Without pulling your hair out. You know what I mean? If you don't know anybody, it's like going to the DMV. You know, I'm assuming that the DMV where you are is just as traumatic as the DMV where we are, you know, trying to get your driver's license and get your car tags. You go in there, it's like a zoo. Everybody's frustrated. You stand in line for hours and so on. It's a bureaucracy, the housing authority. So it's all about relationships. It's all about you taking the time to understand and develop those relationships and get to know people who are administering the programs and things like that. So once you take the time to do that, that third leg of the stool, which I just described, is not so bad. The inspections are pretty straightforward. They're standard. If you know what they're looking for, then you can be proactive. You know, you know they're going to look at A, B, C, D, E. As long as you know that, then you make sure that A, B, C, D, E is done. So you're going to pass. Okay. If you don't know, then you're looking to do A, B, C, D, E, and they look at F, G, H, I.
Right.
And you're going to get upset because you say, well, hold on a bit. I didn't know about A, B, C, D, E. But if you took the time to understand, then you wouldn't focus on the I, J, K, L. Right. You'll be focused on A, B, C, D, E, you know what I mean? And so on. So it's not so bad once you take the time to it. I mean, I teach this stuff, so it's not so bad to show people how to do this stuff.
Yeah.
So you mentioned there is a secret. Well, you didn't say secret, but I'm calling it a secret to keeping your tenants happy. And obviously you figured something out, right? Like you have tenants 10, 12, 13, 15, 23 years. So I definitely want to touch on that.
Okay. So here's the process. The process comes is that, you know, for your audience, you buy a house. Okay. And the question becomes, what are you buying? And, like any business, at the end of the day, you're going to, sell it or rent it to a customer. Okay. So in my case, it's the tenant. So I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of the tenant who I'm trying to attract. Where do they want to live? Where do they not want to live? What kind of amenities are they looking for? What kind of amenities do they not want? What kind of landlord do they want to rent from? What kind of landlords do they not want to rent from? So I understand who my customer is. Okay. I know who these people are. I know what they want. I know what they don't want. I mean, I know them. Okay. I've taken the time to understand them. So if you're a landlord, you need to take the time to understand the type of tenants you're trying to attract. Okay. And that starts off in the house, the area, the neighborhood, and the condition of the house and the amenities of the house. Okay. It starts with that. So the product is what starts the whole process off. Okay. And in our case, obviously, as investors, it's the product is the house. So assuming that you have a product that the type of tenant you're trying to attract is interested in, okay, then when you advertise, okay, when you have a vacancy, if you advertise, there's a better chance that you're going to attract that customer, okay, because you have what they're looking for, okay. In this area, in Washington, D.C. area, most of the houses are three bedrooms. They're just naturally three bedrooms. They got three bedrooms. They got, you know, you walk in, you got living room, dining room, kitchen on the first floor. Upstairs, you've got, three bedrooms and a bathroom. OK, that's the typical home here in Washington, D.C. They have a basement, but the basements are pretty much it's just, you know, open space or whatever it is. OK, so given when I took the time to understand the housing authority, they said that, look, our people have a hard time finding 4, 5, and 6 bedroom houses. OK, there are people with 4, 5, and 6 bedroom vouchers, but they can't buy in houses to meet that group of people because most of the houses are three bedrooms. OK, so I saw that as an opportunity. OK, I'm saying, OK, then there's a demand for 4, 5, and 6. The supply is not there. And therefore, maybe I can meet that demand. OK, and so I started buying these three bedroom houses and turn them into 4, 5, and 6. OK, because I understand what the code requirements are and how to do that. So therefore, I start off with a product that's in high demand. OK, and it's low supply. OK, so I flip the supply and demand curve upside down. So now I have something that's high demand, is low supply. So I can attract the people I'm looking for. That's number one. The second thing is, okay, then, so you attract these folks. How do you, how do you screen them? Okay. And because that's the next part of the equation. Everybody will love your home, but not everyone's going to take care of your home. Everybody loves your home, but not everyone's going to stay there for very long. Okay. So how do you attract the family that's going to stay there a long time? And that's where the screening comes in, because everybody has a history. And what we do is, a very thorough screening process. You know, we contact the current landlord, previous landlords, we check income and credit, but we also go to the person's home to see how they keep their home. Okay. Really? Because how you keep your home today is how my house will be in 3 months, guaranteed. Right. Okay. And you cannot tell how someone's going to keep their home by looking at them, what they wear, how they talk, what kind of car they drive. That's got nothing, absolutely nothing to do with how they keep their home. The only way you'll know how your home is going to be is to go to their home. Okay. That's it. And so that's part of the screening process, is that we insist, we tell people, this is what we're going to do as part of that screening process. We're going to go to your home. Now, you may think, well, you know, why would anybody allow you to go to their home? You know, no other landlord does that. We could do that because we have a product that's in high demand and low supply. Okay. It's a HGTV quality home. It's a beautiful home. And that is a dream come true for a family, a dream come true. Never in their wildest dreams do they ever think that they'll have the opportunity to live in this house, in this neighborhood, and so on. And so you attract those families who say, my house, fine, let's go. Come anytime you want. My house is exactly like this. I mean, that's the caliber of people we're dealing with. Not your stereotypical. These are quality families. And you can't judge them by where they live. I was just speaking to one of them not too long ago. They said, look, don't judge me by where I live, because I don't control that. You know, judge me by what's inside my house, because I can control that. And you go to their home, and their home is spotless. Spotless.
That's because you gave them notice.
No. That's true, but you can tell superficial cleaning from real, and so on. So you get the kind of people who are not intimidated by that. they understand why you want to come to their home. They understand, you know, and they're very proud of their home, and they'll invite you to their home, and because they have a pride of rentership. Okay, so that's part two, which is the screening. And then part three, which is, you know, once they're in the home, how do you make sure that they, you know, take care of your house, stay a long time? So every Mother's Day, you know, we send all our tenants bouquets of flowers. Every Christmas, we send them Christmas presents. If the kids get A's at school, we give them a $50 gift certificate. And we have a timeshare a couple of hours ago away from here in the mountains of Virginia. All our tenants get free vacations.
What?
Like for the year? You get to go like once a year, wow.
Once a year, 3 days, 2 nights, wow. To a resort.
That's cool.
Okay, now
that's an expensive.
So let me just summarize. You got a nice house in a nice neighborhood, HGTV quality home, okay? And you have a landlord who gives you Mother's Day gifts, encourages the kids to do well at school, gives them Christmas presents and free vacations. Most of the rent is covered by the housing authority, and it's a nice house, a nice area. So the question is, I mean, they're savvy people also. What I'm trying to do is to stack the deck so far in my favor that they're not even thinking about leaving.
Yeah.
Because if the choice is to rent from me or to rent from Charles, let's just say, okay, they don't know Charles. They don't know if he's a good landlord or a slumlord. They don't know if, you know, he's going to fix things. They don't know you, okay? But they are renting from me, and I have a great house and a great neighborhood, a great landlord is doing all those things, okay? What are they going to do? You know, as long as I do what I'm supposed to do, which is take care of the house when stuff goes wrong, okay? They're not even thinking about leaving. And that's how you get your 5, 10, 15, 20-year tenants.
Yeah.
This is not sort of cross my fingers and hope for the best. This is a calculated strategy based on a very simple premise. It's cheaper to have a tenant stay in your home than it is for them to leave, and then you have to find somebody else. Yeah. Okay, it's going to that whole thing about turnover, because most investors, landlords, they focus on the income side of the ledger. You know, hey, how can I increase the rent by $20, $50, $100? Okay, so I can make more money. When I'm saying no. What you need to do is to focus on the expense side, and your biggest expense is turnover and vacancy, because that turnover is going to cost you 2 months' rent, which dwarfs a $50 rent increase. Okay. And so if you can't take care of that turnover vacancy cost, it doesn't matter if you increase your rent by $50. It doesn't matter, because it gets wiped out when they leave.
I like that, because it absolutely I've experienced it. So I know, I definitely know it's way better to just keep them in the property than to have to spend all that money, because turnover looks different. Some tenants are harder on the property. Some tenants, it's an easy turnover. But exactly. Worst case scenario, you're having to do a really extensive kind of repair job, and that can set you back.
Yeah, 2-3 months, definitely. Yeah. So, I mean, I said I've learned that the hard way. I mean, what I'm sharing with you isn't something I just woke up one day and figured it out. It's been through trials and tribulations, pain and suffering, you know, headaches and banging my head against the wall. I've been through all of that. You know, tenants from hell who are not paying you. And I mean, I've been there, done that. And the formula I've just described is, in my opinion, the best one for single families.
Yeah. Before we let you go, we didn't talk to you about how you're financing your portfolio. Can you kind of walk us through how financing started for you and how it's changed as you've grown your portfolio?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. When I first started, the first house I bought, that disaster from hell, that was a no money down. So I didn't really need to finance that one. The second one was a house hack where I got FHA. I think it was FHA financing. So I got low interest rate financing, and then I lived there and then saved the money and bought the next house and so on. So I was just using regular conventional financing, and I saved money for the down payment and then bought a house. And so that's how I started off doing it. And I've kind of transitioned now to, it's a 3-part financing strategy whereby I've just finished the house last week, in fact, in Washington, D.C. So I bought that thing for $525. It was $522. Let's just say $525. And we spent about $225,000 on the rehab, the major rehab. So, I mean, these aren't simple, you know, paint and carpet. These are major rehabs. And so how do I finance it? I financed it by a relationship with banks. So I have a bank, where they fund, part of the acquisition renovation. I have private investors, people that know me, trust me, and want a better return. So they borrow me money. And then I use my own personal funds as well. And then once the renovation is finished and we have the tenants in place, we then refinance. And then I go to another bank and then we replace the short-term funds with permanent financing and then just repeat the cycle again. So it's a hybrid of bank money, private money, and personal money.
On that last deal, what was it worth when you were finished with the rehab?
It's about $900,000.
Nice. Yeah. So when you're looking for deals, are you looking for off market? Because, I mean, a $225,000 rehab sounds like a property that's almost falling over. But what are you looking for when you're looking for a deal?
I mean, I could show you the video of the house if you want. But what do I look for? I got this one from a wholesaler. So, you know, people know me. They bring me leads. I mean, it's a competitive market here. Very, very tough.
Right.
It's hard to find good deals. And I'm sure it's the same thing everywhere. So it's your ability to execute is really important. And the relationships that you have with your deal finders, whether it be real estate agents, whether it be wholesalers, bird dogs, brokers and things like that. So I'm always networking. I'm always, telling people what I'm looking for, my buying criteria. I have a joint venture program whereby if you bring me a deal, I'll show you how to do it. So if you want to learn what I do, let's just say Roshana brings me a deal. If I buy it, then I'll show her. She'll be a part. She'll get a front, you know, look, she gets the chance to look over my shoulders as we execute, because I'm always trying to encourage more people to do this. The pie is big enough. It's not like if I teach Roshana or Charles what I do that you're going to buy the whole of DC. You're not. The demand is too great. You can't feel the need. You can't. So it doesn't matter if I tell people what I do. In fact, I'm trying to encourage more of us to do this because we're going through some serious gentrification in Washington, D.C., like I'm sure other places. A lot of African-Americans are being displaced from these neighborhoods. They're going. Once they're out, they're not coming back. And, so what I try and do is to give these families a chance to live in these gentrifying neighborhoods, so that they can get the benefits of the neighborhood as opposed to being displaced and somebody else gets the benefits. So these families, they're good families. They deserve a chance. The kids deserve to be in go to better schools. The kids deserve to be in safer environments. They deserve that. And, so that's what I do. I give them a chance to stay in the neighborhood as opposed to being displaced. And, so I'm trying to encourage more people to do this and such that way, yes, you're making money, but also you're doing good as well. You're making an impact.
Right.
And then how do you structure that joint venture deal? It's just a matter of if they bring the deal, or are you having them responsible for like some of the financing or, putting up some of the money?
No, it depends. I mean, there are different. We have deal finders. They bring the deal. I have some private investors. They bring money, and I pay them a return on their money. And so some people can bring money. Some people can bring deals, and some people bring skills, which, if they have some skills, then we'll see what we can do to barter the skills. So everybody can bring something. And it's just me trying to figure out how to make it a win-win for everybody. It's all about creating that win-win formula. Because as I said, I've realized that it doesn't matter. It's okay if I teach everybody what I'm doing. It's okay. It doesn't matter. The pie is big enough for everybody. And we need to start developing wealth in our community. We need to own these assets. If we don't own it, somebody else is going to own it. And somebody else is going to benefit from this stuff. Not you, not we. And so what can I do to show people what I do, and such that, we can sort of start bringing generational wealth, and we can start building legacies, and, we can start taking our own destiny in our hands rather than relying on other people.
Absolutely.
Todd Consulting presents the Vending Machine Business Webinar. You can only have one job, but you can have as many vending machines as you want. This is your chance to see how we do business and how you can start your very own vending machine business. Avoid the mistakes we made and start winning. You'll be shown how we find, negotiate, buy, and manage our vending machine business, generating thousands per month, and how it has unlimited scale. To find out more details, hit us up on the link in the bio, on Instagram at Partner with Millie, or on Instagram at Todd.Capital, or just head over to gumroad.com/Todd Capital.
Before we get to the wrap-up questions, what is your overall goal for your business? Where do you see yourself and your business in maybe 5 years, 10 years, or even when you retire?
My goal this year was to, I bought two houses here. My goal was to buy, I was trying to buy four houses here. Maybe I'll get, if I'm lucky, I'll get a couple more before the end of the year out. I should get at least one more. But my goal is to provide housing for 30 children, okay, this year. And so it's all about helping other families, if that makes sense, okay? So if I can provide housing for a family of five, then that's, and they've got four children, let's say, that's four children of my 30. if I don't do it, then my goal is to teach other people to provide housing for those families as well, if that makes sense. I was talking to my mother, a few years back. You know, she's in England, and so she was saying to me, she's not an entrepreneur. She's just, a mother, and she was just saying to me, "Look, Joseph, when is enough enough? When are you gonna stop? Why are you buying more houses? Why? Why are you doing this? Haven't you got enough?" It's a legitimate question. Why are you, Charles, doing what you're doing? Why are you, Rashawn? Why are you doing it? Why? What's the purpose? Why? It's a legitimate question that I think should be asked. Okay. What are you chasing and why are you chasing it? Okay. And so she threw that at me, and I thought about it, and because I don't need to buy any more houses. I really don't. But after I thought about it, I said, well, hold on a minute. I can make an impact on people's lives. Okay. I mean, there are neighborhoods where, the house where I used to live in Washington, D.C., when we were there, that block where we were was 100% black. Okay. Now that block is 100% white. The only black family on that block is my tenant. That's it.
Wow.
That's it. Okay. Huh. If it wasn't because of me, she wouldn't be there, period. Okay. And that's the story of D.C. Okay. It's some serious stuff going on here. If you check it out, neighborhoods are being transformed big time. And, so if I don't do this, who's going to do it? Who's going to give that family the chance to live in that nice house in that neighborhood? Who's going to do it? If I don't do it, yeah. If we don't do it. Okay. So I have the opportunity to do something. And so my response to my mother is, well, if I don't do it, if I stop, then it's kind of selfish, in a sense that I'm not helping somebody else who I could help. Yeah. You know what I mean? So that was my response to, I love what I do. I enjoy it. It's great. I love being a landlord, Section 8 families. I think what I'm trying to do is to hopefully share what I know with other people, be an inspiration, and hopefully try to encourage people to consider building generation wealth and building a legacy such that we can leave something for future generations.
Right. I love it.
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir. We're going to get to the wrap-up questions. We're going to fire them off really quick. The very first one is, who is somebody that you look up to and why?
Oh, boy. I didn't know these questions are coming. Oh, my goodness. Who is somebody I look up to and why? Believe it or not, it's my mother. I don't know if that's a fair response. She's very simple in the sense that she's not trying to. She's in England. She's in her mid-80s now, and it's very good to have conversations with people who are grounded, because they have a different context. They see the world different. They've been through experiences, and they see what's important and what's not important. And ask those tough questions. Why are you doing this? What is this for? You need to get your priorities straight, and so on. So, because if you're not careful, you start chasing stuff, and you start what I call it, chasing rainbows. You're always looking for something else and looking for something, and that may not be necessary. You know what I mean? So I don't know if that's a good answer to your question.
Great answer.
The best answer is the honest answer.
At the end of the day, I'm pretty straightforward in the sense that I'm not you don't really know me that. I mean, I'm not that flashy kind of guy who's trying to show off to people to show people what you've got, because that's not necessary. It's not important. You know what I mean? It's all about relationships. It's about, treating people well, treating people, without any hidden agendas, and trying to help those people you can. and not necessarily expecting anything in return, but just being nice to people. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So next question. What is your favorite real estate or business book?
That one is probably The Real Estate, A Millionaire Real Estate Investor, okay, by Gary, Gary Keller and Jay Papillon. Uh-huh. That one is a good book. It's a really good book. It's pretty meaty. I mean, I read it when it first came out, a good 15 years ago, probably. But it's a solid book with a lot of good good information, good guidance, and it breaks down the whole process very systematically. It's a very, very good book if anybody hasn't read it.
Yeah. What does wealth mean to you?
What does wealth mean to me is wealth and financial independence, I think, are tied. Okay. I don't know if that's your another question. Do you have that? Okay. If not, then I'll put it together. Okay. Wealth is all about, as far as I'm concerned, owning appreciating assets. Okay. Assets that increase in value over time. Okay. So whereby you don't have to do a lot of work and it keeps on coming in. Every month, you know, if I treat my tenants well and they stay, that money's coming in. Okay. And if my tenants are happy, that money's coming in. Okay. And to me, I can only do that, first of all, by having assets. Okay. And two, I can only do that by valuing the second most important part of this business, which is my tenants. I see them as assets. Okay. Most landlords, they just see the tenants as people who, as long as I don't hear from them, as long as they pay the rent, that's all I care about. Okay. No, it's not. Not. These are the people who are giving you financial independence. They're the ones bringing in the revenue and they're your customers. And if you treat them well, they return that by taking care of the house, staying a long time, paying the rent, and being pleasant to deal with. A couple of, about a month ago, went to one of my tenants' homes, and we're just talking. And she just said, look, two of my kids have got 4.0 GPAs. They got 4 rides to go to Morehouse, okay? That will never have happened if they weren't in this neighborhood.
Wow.
Okay? No way, Jose. They're in a better environment. They go to better schools. They got better neighborhoods, better neighbors, sorry. And they're just around, positive people. So where they were before, that wasn't possible. Mm-hmm. It was a pretty tough neighborhood. And, the mother was always scared for their safety. And so they're in a better environment. It's the same family. They're in a better environment. Now they're talking about, full scholarships. This is some serious stuff we're talking about here, about how we can impact people's lives. And, so it's not just about you and me. It's what can we do? What's our contribution? Once all is said and done.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That is so, that's so true. So true.
Our last question is, what do you think sets apart successful investors from those who fail, give up, or never get started?
I think it's overcoming fears. It's scary to get out of the comfort zone. And because you're in uncharted territory. And so I think that overcoming fear is really important, because fear will paralyze you into not doing it. It'll paralyze you into staying in the comfort zone, in the familiar environment. And I think that if you're able to, there's a lot of things, but if you could able to address that. And the second part, if you can associate yourself with people who are successfully doing what it is that you want to do, like mentor, coach, okay? Because there's lots of people doing stuff. So if I wanted to be the world's greatest, real estate agent, okay? I can wing it and figure it out, okay? Or I can find Roshana, okay? The world's greatest real estate agent broker, okay? So she would tell me, look, Joe, this is how it works, okay? I've made the mistakes that most other agents have made, okay? I've stepped on the landmines and I've navigated these potholes, okay? I know how it works, okay? And so this is what I suggest that you do, okay? So I would follow Roshana's advice because she's successful at doing that, okay? And now there's lots of agents out there or brokers out there, but there may not be as many successful ones, okay? So I would try to find the successful ones who are doing what it is that I want to do and try to incentivize them to help me. So that way you don't have to recreate the wheel, because there's no need to we don't have enough time to make unnecessary mistakes. I don't have the time to make the mistakes that Roshana has already made, okay? I'd rather incentivize Roshana to tell me so I don't make those mistakes, okay? As the saying goes, a wise man learns from his mistakes. A genius learns from other people's mistakes. You know what I mean? We need to be geniuses.
Awesome. Thank you.
Love it.
Honestly, I feel like I could just ask you questions for hours because you were just filled with wisdom. You've been doing this for a long time. You're ultra successful. Thank you for coming on this show. The last question we always leave with is, where can people find you? Where can they follow you? And where can they support what you have going on?
Where can they send deals?
Right. Send me deals. Oh, boy. You can reach me at my website, which is joeasamoah, J-O-E-A-S-A-M-O-A-H, joeasamoah.com. And I'm on Instagram and Facebook, DR, that's Dr. Joe Asamoah, DR, Joe, J-O-E, Asamoah, A-S-A-M-O-A-H. Every Wednesday, I have a Wealth Wednesdays. You know, it's on a live stream on Instagram and Facebook, 7 o'clock Eastern time, every Wednesday. I just did one yesterday. And every other Friday, I have a live stream at Bigger Pockets. So I'm at Bigger Pockets platform every other Friday. I just did one last week. Next week, I'm going to be doing one. Have you heard of that guy, Michael Holmes?
No.
He's a famous HGTV star. It's rehabbing and so on. So he's agreed to be interviewed by me. I'm going to be interviewing him next week. I've interviewed Barbara Corcoran, the Shark Tank, and a few other people. So every other Friday, Bigger Pockets. But yeah, every Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern time, I'm on joeasamoah.com and Instagram and Facebook. I welcome the opportunity to meet people, to share knowledge. And, you know, please follow me, like me, and, you know, let's grow the community. The pie is big enough for everybody. Let's build some wealth. Let's make money and let's help other people as well.
Yeah. I am definitely inspired. Thank you, Dr. Joe. Thank you, Miss Roshana Scott, the Realtor of the Year in Chicago. And thank you to our listeners.
Amazing interview, Joe. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. You're welcome. I really appreciate the, you know, giving me the opportunity to share with your audience.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So for all the listeners, make sure you leave us a rating review. We like 5-star reviews. Also leave us a comment to let us know what we're doing well and what we can improve on. My name is Charles Oglesby with Miss Roshana Scott for the Oglesby and Scott Show, signing off.
What's going on, podcast listeners? This is your man, Donald the Voice, the official editor and podcast producer of the Oglesby and Scott Show. And listen, I just had to come in and tell you that we appreciate your listenership, and I want to give you a special offer for listening to this podcast. If you have voiceover, podcast, or video editing needs, let's talk. You can go over to donaldthevoice.com/contact, and I'll be happy to talk with you about what you need and how I can serve you. You want to sound good and look good so that people can feel good and do good as a result of listening or watching your content, and I'm here to help you make that happen. So let's talk. Go over to donaldthevoice.com/contact, and we'll talk. Have a good rest of the day, evening, morning, whatever time it is, and I'll talk to you soon.